All right, back here inside Ivy Hoops, Brett Franklin and Jill Glessner with you. And continuing to talk on the expert hotline, we now move to the Ancient Eight men's hoop side of things. Dartmouth men's basketball on the road this week. First of a four-game road trip. They'll take on Brown Friday evening in Providence and then Yale Saturday night down in New Haven. And to help preview this week and talk about the season so far, the second-year head coach of Dartmouth men's basketball, Dave McLaughlin, joining us on Inside Ivy Hoops. Coach, appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Coach, before we kind of delve into the season, I'm curious, kind of, this is your second year in the Ivy League. What have you learned the most from year one at Dartmouth to now in year two?
You know, I think you always grow as a coach each year, but specifically in terms of the league, you can't really express what back-to-back games are until you truly do it. I think at other Division I places, you'll have that in tournament formats in MTEs or maybe in postseason league tournaments. You have that, but you know that's once a year, and you know that's once in the fall, in November maybe, and then once if you're fortunate enough in March, where you might even have three games in 3 days. you know, but you don't, until you go through it, until you experience a Friday night, and then especially on the road, which we are the next two weekends, traveling anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours to your next game, and then having to get ready to play the next night, that's quite a challenge, and it really provides a lot of great opportunities for coaches, including myself, to get better at their craft.
Dave, looking back to when you accepted this job in Hanover and just your background, you were an assistant at Northeastern under Bill Cohen. Prior to that, you had a ton of success at Division II Stonehill in little old Easton, Massachusetts. When you were interviewing for this position here in Hanover, you know, we all know the background. Dartmouth hasn't made an NCAA tournament since Dwight D. Eisenhower was in office, and there's been a struggle, even though there was some growth the past couple of years, but overall it's been a struggle the last 25 years or so. What drew you to Hanover? What drew you to taking this job, and what gave you the idea that, hey, yes, I can turn this thing around up in Hanover?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's the Ivy League itself. It's such a unique league. You're dealing with a unique type of student-athlete. So I think that was very appealing. I think meeting with the administration here and the leadership team, especially Brian Austin and Harry Sheehy, with those two, just to see their energy and to see how they spoke about how the program was going to be supported and from top to bottom, and how they knew it was going to take some time to build something, but they didn't want any quick fixes. They wanted something that could be built, that could be lasting, and that could be a reflection of not only their values, but a vision that I had that they could share along with me. So that excited me. And then, you know, without knowing it, this is such a nice area, the Upper Valley. And once I was around campus and got settled, this is after I had the job, I realized how fortunate my family was. It's such a great, great community. And it's not just Dartmouth College, it's the whole Upper Valley community. And everyone supports each other on so many different levels. And we've been very fortunate as a family to be able to transition into that.
Looking back on last season, your first year, you were right in the thick of things. Your squad was right into the Final Four spot there. Pretty much had every scenario go your way to get that four spot. Unfortunately, just went up against a very hot Princeton team to close things out. You know, what was that journey like in that first season, Coach, to not just, you know, obviously have your first go-around, but to be competitive down the stretch? And was that an uplifting message for your team coming into this offseason, into this year? Like, hey, guys, we can compete night in and night out. What did that late stretch run of last season do for your team heading into 2017-18?
You know, even more so than the stretch run is just, you know, playing well. Even though we might have lost some games throughout, we were playing well. We were playing very competitively. We were seeing a transition from our challenging practices, our competitive practices to the floor. And you're right, when you can begin to see how the process is ticking away and beginning to pay off, that always sets a good tone. And we spent a lot of the spring talking about how we need to continue to develop and nurture a work culture here, where guys are getting better on their own, guys are ready to work with each other, and guys are ready to compete when coaches aren't around, and how that can really set the table for this upcoming season.
Looking at the start of this season, Coach, Obviously, the big news at the beginning of the year, Evan Boudreau leaves the team before the day before the season starts. Jillian Smith gets injured, finger injury. Still don't know the status on him moving forward. I mean, that's a lot to throw at a team to begin the season, losing your 1-2 player that quickly. Describe to us the mentality of the team after that and how this team's been able to gel here, especially into non-conference play.
Yeah, I've kind of said this before, but typically if you know you're going to be losing 30 points a game to graduation, you know, you have the offseason and the summer and the preseason to establish your identity. When you have those points and you take your entire preseason and you're building your offense and defense and maybe time and score, you know, whatever it might be, around that point total or the total contribution you're getting, when you don't have that anymore, you have to re-identify yourselves, redefine yourselves on a lot of different levels. And so I think the first thing we did when we realized we were losing a player before the season started, we kind of had a little bit of a, it was a very much a galvanizing moment for us, and not just for our players, but for the entire staff, for our support staff. And I think we used that as a little bit of a rallying cry. And then, you know, when guys get injured during the year, like Jillian, and that happens, it's pretty much just the next man has to be ready. The next guy has to be ready to go. And that's how we arrange our practices. We like to have very competitive practices. We like to make sure everyone gets multiple opportunities to compete and show that they're ready to compete in games. And some guys have really stepped up because of that. And we have a very young team. 75% of our minutes pretty much go to first and second year players. So the departure and the injury has allowed for younger guys to get more minutes and obviously make some mistakes as young players, but also just improve on a very rapid pace.
You mentioned those younger guys. Can you tell us one or two of them that you're most impressed with that have come in and made an impact?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, our sophomores all got better last year. So our second-year guys, we'll talk about the first-year guys in a moment, but our second-year guys all made significant strides from last year. And they're all very good workers and hard workers. So Brendan Barry certainly made a step from last year, and we're asking a lot of him, not only to be a scorer for us, but to get us an offense. And then Ian Sestair and James Foy in the backcourt, they've made significant strides from last year. And even this weekend at Harvard, James Foy had some great moments for us. And at BC, where we just about had the lead at halftime, Ian Sestair had 4 threes in the first half. And then Will Emery's been terrific. He's been practicing really well, and that's translated to great performances in games. He's had games where he's had over 10 rebounds. He's had games where he's had 20 points. So it's nice to see that growth, and I think we want that to identify our program, where guys are consistently getting better each year. As far as our first-year guys go, we've got three front-court players that are giving us significant contributions, Chris Knight, Aaron Rye, and Idris Jackson, and they're doing a terrific job. And granted, they make mistakes and they're a little up and down, but they're really starting to come along. And that's one of the harder positions to be a young player in college as a front court, because of the physicality, because of the nature of play, because of the multiple things you probably have to do on the defensive end. That's really hard to be a young player and play a lot of minutes at the forward spot. So we're really happy with what they're giving us.
One, you mentioned Chris Knight there, and I think that's a name that if you follow the Ivy League, this is a kid you're going to want to follow here. He just brings such a unique dynamic to your team, Coach. Freshman out of DeForest, Wisconsin. He's lengthy. He's athletic. Played some great defense against Chris Lewis, which isn't easy, last Saturday against Harvard. What is the ceiling with Chris Knight? I mean, he's a kid who's coming on here just as a freshman. It's exciting to know that we've got another few years up here in Hanover with him.
Yeah, I think Chris's ceiling is whatever he wants it to be. You know, his first transition here was how to learn how to practice very competitively and hard every day. He now absolutely knows how to do that, and that's quickly translating to games for him. I think the next progression, which he's actively in right now, is, you know, how to work on his game on his own outside of practice and how to learn to get better through film, and he's really buying into that as well. And you're talking about a young man that was 17 years old, you know, 35 days ago.
Wow.
So he's someone who has given us an athletic presence, a physical presence. And there are things he still does in the court that I don't think he knew that he can do that. He's able to do, and we weren't aware at the time. He just, you know, might make a move, and you're like, okay, great. Well, that's something we'll add to that later. So I think he's someone that there is no ceiling for him right now because of his youth, because he's going to become much stronger and more athletic. And I think as we match that work ethic with his ability, then I think you'll understand what the ceiling at least could be in the future.
Dave, looking back to your last contest Saturday night against Harvard, great game, great crowd, your team down by as much as 17, halfway, a little bit more than halfway through the second half. You battle back to take the lead. Crazy sequence of events to finish that second half where you're up by two, loose ball on the floor, somehow gets to Seth Towns, who's fouled on a layup attempt, hits two free throws, we go to overtime. But that's kind of been the character of your team this year, is the fact that you're never down and out. You know, some of the tough non-conference games you've played with Albany, UVM, Boston College, Notre Dame, all those games, you have given teams plenty of fits and even have been down by as much as double digits. Did you know that from day one, that you have that in your squad? And that's got to be a real nice tool in your arsenal to say, hey, guys, we're never out of any game.
Yeah, no, we did not know that from day one. But to be able to say your team on some levels is defined by resilience is a great thing to be able to say. You know, and I've said that publicly before as a coach. That means that you have a team that isn't necessarily looking at the scoreboard, is going to play hard no matter what the situation. And I think that's terrific for us to have. And Saturday's game was a good example of that. And, you know, it was difficult. And, you know, we had a loose ball at the end, and it wasn't just a loose ball. We had a great stop, and we actually had a steal, and we recovered it. And it's one of those really amazing time and score situations. It's 4 seconds left. You have the ball on the ground, and it's kind of a scuffle. You have 2 timeouts. The jump ball's your possession, and you have a foul to give, and you're up 2. So as far as checking all the boxes for time and score, we checked them all. And, you know, it was just a lot of energy, ball on the floor, and a player trying to make a play for another teammate, and the ball bobbled around, and they got it. And to their credit, when you watch it on film, they made a heck of a play. I think it was Corey Johnson got the ball and literally threw a lob pass over one of our defenders' head to Towns under the basket, and Taylor Johnson made a smart play to foul him, so at least put the pressure on him to make the free throw to tie the game. But if you look at that 4 or 5 seconds, there was time and score. My college coach, Coach Whitmer, used to say time and score rules the basketball world. And in those 4 seconds, you must have had 6 or 7 different time and score scenarios.
Sure, it went in slow motion in your eyes. But in order for you to even be there, Coach, I mean, you went on a 24-5 run. And just something I'm curious is, what was the message at halftime? I mean, you were shooting under 30%. You only had 18 points. How did you get your guys kind of motivated and confident going into that second half?
Get the ball inside. Easiest way to calm a team down offensively, especially if you have post players that are comfortable with their back to the basket and you have an identity of playing inside out, meaning if the ball goes inside and it comes back out and you know what you want to do, you know, that usually calms the team down. So I think that was one thing. And I think the second thing is we were getting stops in the first half. I mean, we held them to 20, you know, even though we only scored 18, we held them as well. So we knew we were going to get stops. So then we said, hey, when we get stops, let's look to really get into offense a little better in transition. And, you know, we did that. I think those are the two main things we did. And then we defended them better in the second half than they defended us in the first half.
All right, final question, Coach, and then Jill's got her rapid fire to end the podcast for you. But you look at this weekend, Brown Friday night, Yale on Saturday. Brown, you're going to have your hands full with two of the top leading scorers in the league, and Brandon Anderson and Desmond Cambridge. Both those guys had monster nights against Yale last week. What are going to be the keys to this weekend going into Providence? And then some quick thoughts on Yale for Saturday night.
Yeah, a good day of practice today, which we had. A quick, solid preparation day tomorrow. You know, to make sure everyone's on the same page. And then I think Friday is going to be a game of making sure we, first and foremost, protect the defensive end of the floor in transition. Then we have to protect the paint. They do a fantastic job of getting the ball into the paint, whether it's off of cuts and screening action or off of drives or post-ups, and we have to do a great job protecting there. We have to not foul. They're fifth in the country in terms of percentage of points scored from the free throw line. And they lead the Ivy Leagues in about 11.5 offensive rebounds a game. So we have to make sure we keep them off the glass. And then conversely, we have to really, really value the ball at the end of the floor, especially when you're on the road. You can't give the ball to the other team, especially on the road. And then a quick change, and you go to Yale. Not a little bit different teams and a little more. You just have to key on what they do well. And when you have a one-day or a zero-day prep, you give the guys four or five keys, and some of them are usually the same in terms of protecting the paint, valuing the ball, but there might be a few others of how we're really going to try and defend them and how we're going to try and attack them offensively and get that message across and see if you can translate and execute it during the game.
Coach, before we let you go, as Brett said, I like to end this podcast on I like to call it rapid fire, just a few questions that are non-basketball related. I don't know if rapid fire makes you nervous, so you're in the hot seat, but they're not too hard.
Okay, I like it.
The first question is, how would you describe yourself in one word?
Intense.
How would your team describe you in one word?
A word that I'm allowed to say on the air?
Preferably.
I would say driven.
What is your biggest pet peeve?
Dirty laundry.
What is your favorite pizza topping?
Spinach.
Your favorite emoji?
Oh, God. Favorite emoji? Is a smiley face an emoji?
Yes, that works.
Okay.
Last one, favorite Netflix show?
I never use Netflix.
Wow, that's a first.
So what's a show you like to indulge in if you have time?
If I have time, Game of Thrones would be the one.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Awesome. Dave McLaughlin, head men's basketball coach at Dartmouth. They're on the road this weekend. Brown on Friday night. And then Yale on Saturday night. Of course, both games available on the Ivy League Network. Coach, appreciate the time on Inside Ivy Hoops.
That was fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, that's going to do it for us here. Another edition of Inside Ivy Hoops. Big thanks to Cornell head women's basketball coach Dana Smith. Big thanks to Dartmouth head men's basketball coach Dave McLaughlin. Big thanks to you, the audience. We always appreciate you tuning us in. Love to hear feedback as well, so make sure you hit us up on Inside Ivy Hoops on the podcast and Ivy Hoops online. We'd love to hear from all of you, so... Jill, that's going to do it for us here. Episode 4 in the books. Enjoy this weekend in the Ancient Eight.
I'll see you tomorrow, Brett.
All right. Enjoy your weekend, Hoops fans. We'll talk to you next time on Inside Ivy Hoops. See ya.